Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. Welcome back. I mean, I say welcome back, but if you're here for the first time, firstly, it's great to have you here. And secondly, when you finish this episode, you should definitely consider going and listening to the preceding ones. The tournaments come and go, but the interviews don't go out of date so quickly. We had Heather Watson and Philip Polivo on last week's episode, and Harry Wendelken was refreshingly honest on the one before that. Absolutely worth a listen. And you can look forward to more new voices on this episode, because we have doubles partners on the podcast. Specifically, they are Lily Miyazaki, who went the distance at the W60 Glasgow the week before last, and Emily Appleton, who went from qualifier to queen of the week, as she claims the W25 Loughborough singles trophy this past weekend. Lots of action, lots of drama. As usual, it is roundup time first and foremost. And last week's W25 event in Loughborough is the focus of our attention. This was the fourth week of a five-week swing of ITF World Tennis Tour events currently happening in the UK. It was a women's-only event, and in terms of the level, it was the second step of competition up on the pro circuit. I mentioned that Miyazaki and Appleton are doubles partners currently, and they made it back-to-back semi-finals by reaching the last four in both Glasgow and Loughborough. But it was Gabriella Knutson and Joanna Garland who teamed up to win the doubles trophy at the Dan Maskell Tennis Centre. Although Knutson is from the Czech Republic and Garland plays under the flag of Chinese Taipei, they've both been regulars in the UK this season, with Knutson graduating from Durham University a few months ago, and Garland, who was born in England, winning back-to-back W25 singles titles in Fox Hills and Aldershot as recently as August. The duo weren't seeded in Loughborough, but they took out the top seeds in a hard-fought semi-final and culminated the week with a 6-3, 6-3 defeat of number 3 seeds Martina Kubka and Elena Malagina. Now, Garland in particular is a player you should be keeping track of, I think. She's still young. She turned 21 this season. She climbed as high as world number 14 in juniors, and a fairly tough run of draws recently should not take away from the progress she's been making this season. When she lost in the semi-finals in Roehampton at the end of August, it snapped a 13-match winning streak, and she has the potential to get that streak going again at any moment. And speaking of things that could happen at any moment, let's go then. Qualifier Emily Appleton took a host of people by surprise, including herself, when she bolted from the virtual blue to go all the way to the singles title in Loughborough. After qualifying and winning her first round in the main draw without dropping a set, so that's three matches down, she defeated number 7 seed Diana Marcinkevicha in 3 sets before coming back from 5-2 down in the opener for a 7-5-6-3 win over Eden Silva, who triumphed at one of the W25 events in Nottingham earlier this season. In the semis, she came from a set down to see off longtime rival Elise Maloney. That was 3-6, 6-3, 6-1, before capping off her 7-match wins with a 6-4, 6-4 defeat of top seed and Glasgow semi-finalist Nagina Abduraimova, who was ranked world number 167. Appleton herself, in comparison, was ranked world number 791, and at the start of October, she was actually ranked outside the world's top 1,000 in singles. Thanks to the last couple of weeks, she's now racing back towards the career high ranking of world number 501 that she set back in 2018. Let's take a closer look at the final then. I think Appleton's newfound self-confidence was tangible in that final, and the variety that she's developed in her game over the past 12 months or so of doubles competition and also regular outings on clay courts was very evident. Abduraimova, she actually had a walkover in the semi-finals due to Malagina rolling her ankle during doubles play, so that might not have helped her rhythm, But the bottom line is that Appleton didn't allow her opponent to impose herself and consistently unleash her big baseline strikes the way a lot of other players have done recently. I've mentioned Appleton's ability to adapt, but her huge trademark serve was definitely the cornerstone of this particular victory. She broke through early in both sets, but found herself down in several service games in the aftermath, and on those occasions, unreturned deliveries were a common theme. This accuracy in the face of deficits gradually wore down the top seed's resistance, and that was particularly evident when Appleton got the decisive break in the second set, after saving break point in the previous game. Overall, she saved 10 of the 11 break points that she faced in that match. Now, for anyone who's followed her for some time, it's quite easy to forget that this was unfamiliar territory for Emily Appleton, given that she already had two W15 titles to her name from 2018, and more recently, she dominated the opening swing of the 2021 UK Pro League by reaching the first five finals and winning three of them. Incidentally, all of those victories took place in Loughborough. Actually, it's quite poetic that she did a mini Grand Slam and won seven matches to pick up the trophy last week, because when she swept those three UK Pro League Loughborough victories, the format was to play seven matches in 7 days. So, good memories there. Nevertheless, it remains the case that Appleton had never been beyond the first round in singles at a 25k level event prior to Loughborough. Reaching the second round at the W60 in Glasgow the week beforehand was actually the first time she'd gone beyond round one at a singles event higher than 15k level. And it was watching Appleton in that first round in Glasgow that made me hopeful for her heading into the back end of this season. For the first time in over a year, I think, I felt like I was watching the Emily Appleton of April 2021, who seemed free of tension on court and swung through her shots with trust and freedom. That manner on court is essential for the Appleton game style, because the big serve and forehand are founded on confidence and founded on belief. Emily herself touches on this sudden change of feeling in the chat that we had after her ultimate victory. But before that, you're going to hear from her doubles partner, because even though we did hear very briefly from Lily Miyazaki on last week's podcast, her achievement there and her form across the season deserves more of a spotlight. A brutally quick turnaround from Glasgow worked against her in Loughborough, and she did lose her opening round there in three sets, but she's definitely a player you're going to be seeing more of over the next couple of seasons. So I got her to give you a little more insight into who she is and where she's come from and what she's looking to achieve in the near future. Bear with us here, okay? We were recording this on the balcony while matches were underway, and one umpire did give us a little warning at one stage, so the tones are quite hushed, but you should be able to pick up every single word from Lily Miyazaki.
Testing, testing.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
And I'm just testing to make sure the chair umpire of the closest match to us cannot hear us, and he's not even glanced over. So I think that we're safe. But here with Lily Miyazaki in a conversation, Lily, that should probably have happened last week, actually, because she went all the way to the trophy in Glasgow, but I wasn't around on that final day. But many more people, I think, will know your name now after you got that big win over Heather Watson in the final. Just talk a little bit about, we're in Loughborough at the moment, different story this week, but a little bit injured. There was something that you picked up at the back end of last week. Do you want to fill us in on that one?
Yeah, so obviously last week I played a lot of tennis. I played, what, three set matches, and yeah, it was just a lot. And then obviously at the end of that you're going to be feeling it physically, and then so I played the final on Sunday. I flew that evening to Birmingham, and then that flight was quite delayed as well, so I ended up staying that night in Birmingham.
No, you didn't. Yeah, how long was the flight delayed?
I mean, just an hour or so, but okay. I got there, I don't know, around 10 p.m. And then, so I stayed literally right close to the, really close to the airport. And then the next morning, on Monday, I came to Loughborough. And then I played Tuesday, so it was just a really quick turnaround. And yeah, I was just feeling my legs a little bit. And also, I picked up some kind of cold in Glasgow as well.
I'm not surprised based on how freezing it was up there.
I think a few players picked something up, so I think there was something going around, yeah.
But not the most ideal start to the week in Loughborough. But at the time of speaking, you've still got doubles to go with Emily Appleton. We're going to keep this concise because Emily plays singles at some point and we're interested in watching that one. But Lily, before we talk a little bit more about Glasgow, I want to go right back to the beginning because a lot of people listening kind of won't know your backstory, how you came to the sport and actually how you came to be playing under the British flag, because at the beginning of this season, you were still representing Japan. Talk to me as if I know nothing about this. I know we've had similar conversations before, but in terms of who were your family, how did you start playing tennis, and how did you come to be in the situation you're in right now representing GB? I'll let you go from there.
So I was born in Japan. I lived there for about 5 years, and then my family actually moved to Switzerland when I was five, for my dad's work, and we lived there for about 4 years, and that's actually where I started tennis. And I mean, my whole family plays like casually. Like my dad enjoys playing a lot. My mum plays a little bit as well. But I'd say I started playing because my brother joined a tennis club. He's 2 years older than me, and then I just kind of tagged along with him. And then obviously in Switzerland back then, that was when Roger Federer was just starting to break out on the tour, so it was huge, and he was obviously very, very popular. And yeah, I just really loved the game, and I continued to play. And then I moved to the UK when I was about 10 years old, I think. And yeah, since then I've lived here. I did my schooling here. I trained, So beginning of this year, I decided to switch to playing to GB, just because, I mean, it's my home, I mean, it's where I train, it's where I feel the most comfortable, and yeah, here we are.
So whereabouts in the UK did you move to initially?
In London, and I still live there now, in the Wimbledon area, so yeah.
And you've played county tennis for the area, I believe, with Emily Appleton.
Yeah, I played for Surrey, I think. I started playing, you know, under 12, under 14 county cups, and more recently, obviously, the women's summer county week and winter county cups. I've played a few times as well, and I've played a lot of club league matches as well. Yeah.
So you mentioned Switzerland and the Fed, so I think we should touch on that briefly. He hung up his rackets last month. Your reaction to that, please, Lily.
I know. I mean, I was so sad, especially watching that Labour Cup weekend. It was so emotional, but I mean, everything has to come to an end at some point, and yeah, I mean, I'm just really grateful to have just watched him over the years. He's been such an inspiration to me and so many other tennis players around the world, and yeah, obviously it's really sad that we won't get to see him play again, but I think he said he's still going to be involved in tennis, so I'm sure we'll see him around.
Yeah, aren't we lucky, I guess, to have been born at the time we were and have witnessed Roger Federer? What a golden era to
exactly,
have witnessed.
Yeah.
And you said the word inspired or inspiration. Looking at your own game, and you said that Federer was kind of a figure there who you looked up to as you were starting to play. Do you see any similarities in your game compared to Federer? I'm not asking you to put yourself on Federer's level here. I'm just asking, is there any inspiration there in terms of your own game?
I shouldn't even be said in the same sentence as him. But, I mean, I like to play with a bit more variety and, you know, use a slice, come into the net sometimes a little bit. And also, I take the ball early. So maybe there are slight similarities, but, I mean, I'm not sure.
I think you mentioned Federer one time, and I was then carefully kind of watching your tennis to see if I could see those similarities. And in Glasgow last week, we saw your ability to slice, to switch it up, that kind of thing. Let's talk about Glasgow then, because it was such a great run for you. You took out the top seed, Katie Swan. You beat Heather Watson in the final from a set and 5-1 deficit, which was quite something. What do you think were the things that worked best for you during that tournament?
So my coach and I, we just spoke about having like an aggressive mindset before like before every return, before every serve, and especially in indoor tennis, that you have to be the one that tries to dictate the points. And I think that really helped me, you know, stay aggressive, especially on returns as well. I think that's where I was able to be really effective, taking it early, and yeah.
You mentioned actually during that week that you hadn't expected to make the final, let alone win the event. At what point did you start to think it was a possibility, or did you not even until you'd actually won the thing?
Yeah, I think I definitely didn't expect it at all. I mean, like I told you, I think since the summer I'd been struggling results wise. I felt in practice and stuff my level was actually getting better and better, so I mean I was happy with in practice, but then in matches it's obviously really different. And but last week something just clicked, and but I think it just helped that my expectations were quite low, so I could play loose, especially at the beginning of the tournament. And as the week went on, I just started feeling more and more comfortable and seeing the ball really well towards the end.
Yeah, we definitely saw that. You said recent results had not been fantastic, but I felt personally across the span of the season that there's been a lot of encouragement for you this year, and a lot of new situations. I know you played Australian Open qualifying at the beginning of the year, but you have also been in WTA main draws. You played the Wimbledon main draw this season. Is there any particular match that you look back on, and it can be a win or a loss, as quite a big one for you in terms of your progress this year outside of Glasgow? Let's put Glasgow to the side for now, but prior to that.
It's tough to say maybe one match, but maybe one of the matches. It was early on in the season, I played at the WTA in Lyon. It was the second WTA that I'd ever played, but I qualified, and I was playing against Anna Bondar, who was, you know, a really good player. And I ended up losing 7-5 in the third, I think, but I was 5-2 up, had a match point, which I can still remember.
I remember watching this match.
And I remember the match point in my head still. But I think that match really made me realise that my level was there, because she's obviously a top 100 player. And yeah, since then, I obviously played the other Grand Slams as well, and then obviously the match against Caroline Garcia at Wimbledon also. I feel like that one definitely gave me a lot of confidence, even though I lost.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that particular match, because I was actually on commentary for that, as you know. That was a pleasure. And it was, I felt such a high level. And I wanted to ask in terms of how you handle losses, because, as you say, even though that was a loss, Garcia then went on quite a crazy run of form. She won like a WTA 1000 event. She went to the semis of the US Open. First of all, did you see those results for her and think about how close you'd been to her? Did that cross your mind?
No, not really. I mean, I knew she was a great player. I mean, even before, she'd already been, top 10, top 5?
Yeah, she's been world number 4, I think, as a career high.
Obviously she's had the level, but I don't know why she dropped for a couple of years. And then, recently her results have been amazing. I was surprised with how close I made that match, yeah.
I found that really interesting, just in terms of how close the level is, I feel, right the way across the board. And we're here at 25 in Loughborough right now, and there's such a high quality of player to the point where no match is really safe, even from the opening rounds. So talking about losses then, you've mentioned a couple of losses there that were actually encouraging. How do you handle losses in general? Are they tough? What's the process that you take when you have to endure a close defeat like those two?
Obviously it's tough, because at the end of the day, you know, tennis is about winning or losing, I guess. But at the same time, most of us were losing every single week. There's only one winner of a tournament, so handling losses is, you know, like a key part of our sport. But I mean, me personally, I think I don't get too hung up on losses. I'm quite a rational person, I'd say, and I just try to take the positives and you know, move on to the next match as quickly as possible.
And you'll be moving on to the next match quickly today, but also next week, I believe you're playing the 100 in Shrewsbury. Mm-hmm. So when this airs, it will be that week. We look forward to that. But just looking into the near future then, Lily, because you have made some strides this year, how's that affected your goals, short-term and long-term? Have they shifted at all?
Not really, because my rankings kind of stayed the same, I'd say, this whole year. It's been around like 250, like just inside 250.
Because you've switched levels, right?
Exactly.
That's the reason.
But yeah, for sure. And because of that, I've had many experiences at the bigger tournaments this year. And so maybe that's why I haven't had as many, I don't know, wins or match wins. So I think maybe the next goal is to try and push into the top 200 and start... you know, collecting some wins at the next level. But yeah.
Step by step. Exactly. I think you've definitely proven this year that you have what it takes to keep climbing. And I love your attitudes and just the way you are on the court. I think it looks like you can conserve a lot of energy just in the way you handle yourself, which is probably going to be helpful further down the road. And yeah, we look forward to seeing how that goes. Lily, thank you for taking some time to chat on a busy day. And I'm sure we'll see you again very soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're so welcome, always. Thank you to Lily for risking the wrath of the chair umpires and taking time out of a match day for that conversation. Much appreciated. And now it's time to hear from her doubles partner, W25 Loughborough singles champion Emily Appleton. This one's a very wide-ranging conversation. It covers everything from the dips and rises of Emily's past season to doubles development to the people in her life off the court who have an impact on what happens on it. Enjoy hearing from the latest Brit to lift a trophy. You can be sure there will be many more of those. Emily Appleton, W25 Loughborough champion. First and foremost, how does that sound? Is it a little bit surreal?
Yeah. It's not real, is it? Doesn't,
well, it is real, Emily.
It is.
It just happens.
But I don't know how that happened. Yeah, I was, like I said in the interview on court, I was happy to come through qualifying, and then just found this space in my head and just kept playing, didn't think about too much. I like the conditions here. Spent weeks and weeks here in 2021 after COVID, so definitely knew what I was coming to, and yeah, just felt sort of pretty calm and good about my game.
Yeah, I didn't really know where to start, but you've helped me out there with the reference to last year, and obviously the two of us were here for quite a while with the UK Pro League. The first 4 weeks of that last year were played here in Loughborough, and you won three of those 4 weeks. You made the final of the other one. Did you feel that this week, the memories, the conditions, did any of that come back to help you almost?
It honestly did. Literally just driving back into the town and going for dinner in the same places. And I just found that routine that I had back in 2021. And it does kind of settle you because you know what you're coming to. Obviously know the courts, how they play. And yeah, it just made me feel pretty comfortable here. Yeah, and it just makes a nice change from going to far-flung places and not knowing what you're coming to, and it kind of unsettles you a bit. So yeah, I think I just made the most of feeling good in a place that is almost like a second home at this point.
Absolutely. You mentioned kind of going to far-flung places and different venues, and there's been quite a lot of that for you, particularly over the past year or so. There have been events in the UK. You've not always played them. You have often gone abroad. I know you've played a lot of clay court tennis. And things have just started to turn around for you on the singles court, literally this month. It was Glasgow last week at the W60. I remember going over to your first round match and thinking, this is the Emily Appleton Loughborough UK Pro League 2021. Just the way you were swinging, and you seemed so much more, I guess, relaxed than I'd seen you in a long time. What do you think changed there in particular in Glasgow? And could you feel a change from kind of recent trips to the singles court?
Yeah, I could. I'm still trying to get my head around what actually changed. But I've been working hard with a psychologist, and we've been talking about lots of things, and she's always been telling me it's just a matter of time before it sort of clicks and I genuinely feel like it is clicking now. So yeah, obviously there's still more work to be done, but I'm happy that I've been able to find this zone the past couple of weeks and just want to keep riding the wave, like I've been saying all week.
Absolutely. Zone is the word. If we can kind of go to that between period then, because over the past, let's say year or so, you've had quite a bit of doubles success and you'd already won a doubles title at this level this season, but the singles had been quite a rocky road. And if we go back to that Pro League swing in Loughborough, you looked unstoppable. You were beating the likes of, you know, Beth Gray, Liz Maloney, anyone that you came up against really had a hard time against you. What happened since then on the singles court? Is there a particular patch of a certain season that you suddenly felt like you went off track? What were the particular struggles over those few months?
Yeah, I think I just lost a bit of confidence in my singles. I have coaches that I work with, but not on a regular basis. So I think I just haven't found that momentum in my training, in my singles training. And I've just enjoyed playing doubles more, and so just decided to go down that route a little bit more, focus on that. So went to bigger tournaments for my doubles, was playing singles as well if I could get in. And I think just slowly playing the bigger tournaments with the better players, being around that professional environment, I think it's, well, I'd like to think it's transferred onto the singles court the last few weeks. And yeah, I think the key for me is to try and figure out sort of why these 2 weeks. But yeah, I'm just grateful that it's come, because I've always known that I wasn't done with singles. I've always known that my level was better than my ranking would suggest. And yeah, I'm happy that I've proved that to myself and to other people as well now.
I think everyone can see that from the outside as well. And there's been a lot of talk about kind of what the doubles has done for you. So I do want to touch on that briefly, because I don't know what's up with my throat today. You see the Barbora Krejcikovas and stuff of this world, and she had a lot of double success before it transferred onto the singles court. Personally, watching you, I feel like you're a lot more confident around the net. You've probably played more drop shots and kind of switched it up a lot more within the past couple of weeks than I ever saw you do during the Pro League swing last year, probably because you didn't need to be honest. But do you feel like it's kind of added another layer, an extra bit of depth to your game being on the doubles court so much?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think, you know, focusing on doubles, you have to be at the net, you have to be making solid moves, brave moves, you have to feel comfortable sort of up there, and I think it's definitely shaped my game. I've always been a pretty okay volleyer, and I've liked to always think it's one of my strengths, but now I actually, you know, look to use it a lot, and it's something that I incorporate into my game. And I credit that all to the doubles, because yeah, just playing doubles week in, week out, and actually sort of focusing on it makes me have to do it. So, and now it's transferring into my singles.
It's an interesting topic, I think, at the moment, doubles, because so many of the British, particularly the British girls, I'll say, are pushing on and doing well. Now, even though this is your first singles title at 25K level, obviously you've won doubles trophies, and you won a 15K doubles trophy last year, alongside Alicia Barnett, who's well on her way to the top 50 in the world. She's right inside that top 100. Obviously, her and Olivia Nichols doing really well. We've got others coming through. Having played alongside someone like that and won a trophy, and she was moving in the same circles as you very recently, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer here, but seeing those girls pushing on, does that impact you at all in terms of, has it helped you kind of see a potential future level for yourself? Does that help you believe a bit more? Does it impact you in any way, just kind of seeing the moves 100% that those players are making?
I think that's largely the reason why so many British girls are doing so well at the moment in doubles. I mean, we're seeing what Lissy and Liv are doing and fully gaining inspiration from that. And we sort of, you know, we want to achieve what they're doing. And it's just so nice to see that other British girls are doing so well at the moment. And personally for me, seeing them and seeing the other girls inside the top 200, it just gives me more belief that I can also do it and follow in their footsteps, and it makes me work harder as well. And yeah, I'm just happy to be a part of that group.
really there's a lot of occasions at the moment where players from the UK are showing how fine the margins are within the sport and getting big wins. And we've seen that with you this week. I think you got a couple of career best singles wins. Were you thinking about kind of rankings gaps at all at that point? Is it just about the rhythm that you're feeling? Was there any kind of extra pressure knowing that you were up against the top seed, or less pressure because you felt like the underdog?
Honestly, today I felt no pressure at all, which is quite rare for me because I'm an overthinker massively. But today I wasn't thinking at all, and I knew that the pressure was all on her. And although my ranking's like, I don't know, 1,000 or something, I know I can play better than that. But yeah, I didn't go onto the court believing that I would lose, but I also didn't believe that I would win. I just sort of went on and played and, yeah, happened to play one of the best matches I've ever played. But, yeah, just didn't really feel much pressure.
Okay. How often have you felt like an underdog throughout your career? Because I know you were really successful in juniors and you reached the world's top 10. You had a top ranking of number 10, which is awesome. But as you were growing up, there wasn't always a tremendous amount of belief that maybe you could, I don't know, hit the heights or whatever in the sport. So did you feel that growing up? Where did you place yourself in terms of kind of belief in yourself, I guess? Did you often go on court thinking that you were the one that could kind of swing with not much to lose?
I've always, very deep down, had a belief that I can do better than I've been doing. And it's one of the reasons that's motivated me to keep on going and keep training. But I'm incredibly hard on myself. I'm a perfectionist to the most extreme. So there have been many, many days, months, where I haven't believed and I've sort of given myself a really hard time. But yeah, I've kept on going and I've forgotten your question now.
It was just in terms of, it was quite a vague thing, really, to be honest with you, in terms of, I guess, kind of pressure that you feel and have felt growing up. Did you feel like people's expectations for you were lower than the expectations you had for yourself, that kind of thing? What was the mindset when you went on court?
I think in the last recent few years, because I've been focusing more on doubles, I haven't felt that many people believe in me, and that's totally fine because, you know, my ranking hasn't really given much to believe in. So I haven't felt too much pressure, but I've put a lot of pressure on myself because I know that I'm better than what my ranking is suggesting. So although I've gone on to matches not really having much to lose, I've still put a lot of pressure on myself, and I would say that's actually probably not a very good thing because it's meant that I've lost matches that I maybe could have won because I've deep down still thought that I could win.
It's so mental, isn't it, a lot of the time? And actually, on that note, let's talk about, you said you were talking to a psychologist. I remember, I think I listened to another podcast that you were on at some point. It might have been the Functional Tennis one last year, and you spoke at that point about how you were meditating.
Yeah.
Is that something that you still do?
No.
She dumped that. Okay. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Did you replace that with the psychologist? What's the situation there?
Yeah, well, I had a little bit of a sabbatical with the psychologist because I was mentally a bit cooked. But then I decided I wanted to try this new person. Actually, Katie McNally's coach, Kevin, okay. I know very well. And he put me in touch with this lady called Sid. And she focuses more on sort of just finding, like, your flow and your zone. And, yeah, she's just been helping me kind of find that. And I've gone through stages of finding it more and then losing it. And I don't know, these last 2 weeks just kind of found it for an extended period of time. So, yeah, I'm going to have a chat with her at the weekend and let her know that I've won this tournament and, yeah, keep on working, I guess. But she's definitely helped me in more ways than one.
Nice. I might have misunderstood you there, but it sounded like you were saying that you left the psychologist for a bit because it got a bit much. Can it then, because I think everyone kind of looks at a psychologist as, oh, you go to them, you get stuff off your chest, you clear a mind. Can it be too much stuff in your head? Is it very kind of situation dependent?
I'd worked with a psychologist since I was probably 13, 14, so quite from an early age, right up until sort of 20, 21. And to be honest, I was just a little bit burnt out with it all. I don't know. I feel like psychologists want you to figure it out. They help you figure it out. They don't give you the answers. And sometimes I was a bit stubborn and just wanted someone to fix it for me. And I got a bit frustrated that I couldn't fix it myself. I just decided I'd take a few months out, try and figure some things out by myself. And that helped. But then I was ready in the summer to try and, start some work with someone new.
You talk about being by yourself. I think that's another contrast from those few weeks of Pro League that we were talking about and then going out on the road, because you were working with Dave Collins, who's head coach at St. George's Hill. And I know there was good vibes with you two, good banter. He would be able to sit at the side of the court during Pro League as well, but not always able to travel with you. How big of an impact do you think that makes at these levels, when some players can afford to travel with a coach or have the ability to, some players can't? Did you feel that absence of Dave at any point? Do you think that had any bearing on your results, the way you were playing, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's definitely tough when you're on the road. I've been traveling a lot on my own for the past few years. My mum's come to a few recently, which has been lovely. But I still have David messaging me before each match, after each match. Same with Johnny Murray, who's helping me with some doubles. So it's nice to still have that support, even from afar. And whenever they can come, I would like to try and get them on board. I had another supporter here this week, since the quarterfinals, called David Gaves. He's been helping me. So it's just nice to have people, whether it's in person or over text or call. It's definitely a lonely existence without having someone there all the time, but it's something that I've gotten used to and I'm getting better in my own company. And now I'm pretty okay with it.
Someone who is there when she can be, and she wasn't able to be this week, but your mum, yes, Sally, who I've seen a lot of, and she's such a support, right? Just talk a little bit about her and the impacts that she's had on you as a person, you and your career, because she's always there. Even if she's not there in person, you can sense that support, right?
Yeah, she's amazing. She's like my best friend. And she's been in the States this week, but still been getting up at 4 a.m. to send me good luck messages and watch my matches at 10 o'clock in the morning over here. I couldn't thank her enough. And it's just nice when we get to travel together. I think she just likes to visit new places around the world with me and support my matches. It's great. It's great having her support.
Daily contacts when you're abroad?
Yeah, we FaceTime every day.
Every day.
We're very close.
Nice. Yeah. Love that. And then I don't think we can kind of go through this without touching on your dad, because mm-hmm. he was a player himself, yep. Michael Appleton. How did that affect you growing up in an environment where your dad was a known name? Did that have any impact on you at all, either positively or not so positively?
Yeah, he was. He coached me right up until probably age of 17, 18. And it was great. There's nothing better than having your dad coach you, because who knows you better than your parents? No one. And I think I took that for granted a little bit. And when we stopped working together at 18, I found that difficult. But he's still in regular contact with me and still helping me from afar. Just trying to do the best I can. And he always supports me, which I'm very grateful for. It's definitely nice to also mix it up, have new coaches, and just variety, I think, is key. It can, things can go a bit stale at times.
Sure. I was going to ask how much involvement he still has and how that works when you've got other coaches as well, kind of how all that input comes together. How does your dad fit in with the coaching situation?
He lives in Germany, so I don't see him too often. So he doesn't actually get involved with the coaching that I have. But whenever I need advice or tips on how to play someone, or if I'm struggling with something on court, then he's always there to help. He even helps with scheduling a little bit. He's really helpful.
Good stuff.
Okay, so you mentioned helpful stuff you're struggling with. You're not struggling with a lot at the moment. The past week or so, it's been very good form. What, in terms of technical things, what are you most pleased with about what you've been able to produce on court over the last couple of weeks?
Probably my serve, to be honest. My serve is probably my strength, but it goes through patches of being good and bad. And I'd lost some confidence with it, like recently, only a few weeks ago. So to come and have it as sort of my weapon the last couple of weeks, it's got me through some matches. I'm very proud of that, and I've overcome some mental hurdles. So yeah, very happy about that. And then also I just think I'm letting go on my shots and being aggressive and moving well as well.
I think that's some progress that I've seen with you as well, because if we go back to a year or so ago when you were playing really well, you were dominating matches, you were generally up, whereas even today in the final there were several occasions where you were down on serve, and actually that big delivery, that is kind of, I felt from watching at the sideline, that's what made the difference in today's match, kind of those cheap points that you were able to get under pressure. So that's great signs for you moving forwards. Okay, so speaking about moving forwards then, we have a big tournament coming up next week.
Yes.
In Shrewsbury. So is that singles and doubles for you?
Yes, yeah. It will be. Yeah, that's the plan.
And have you played much in Shrewsbury before? I remember seeing you there once previously.
Yes, I played last year, the Pro League finals. And before that, I think they used to hold a 25 or a 60. So mm-hmm. I've played that a couple of times. But it's always a lovely venue to go back to. They're so helpful and friendly over there. And yeah, can't wait to get over there.
How do you find playing in the UK in general? We've kind of been all over the place here, but we're kind of coming back to what we were talking about before. And you've not played so much in the UK this year. Was that to do with getting out of the spotlight? Or I know you've played a lot on clay. Was it more to pursue a certain surface? Like, what's been the mindset and the goal with how you've scheduled this season?
I've been scheduling this year for my doubles. Solely for my doubles, and I think the UK tournaments, most of them were 25k level, and I wanted to go higher than that for my doubles, try and get some more points. So yeah, it was a difficult decision, though, obviously, with half of them being within 30 minutes of my house. I could have saved a lot of money on expenses and travel costs, but
sure.
Yeah, I just went in pursuit of more points for doubles. But that's why it's been nice to play these ones, because it's been a range of 25, 60, 100 level.
It seems to all be coming together. It's like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that have been maybe scattered a bit throughout the season, and now you're putting them into place at the back end and looking ready to finish strong, which is awesome. But we have to look ahead, and I generally do ask this towards the back end in terms of goals. So let's say goals for your doubles in the near future.
I mean, I'd love to make the top 100. I believe I can. Going to have to put some work in to do so. But I guess a shorter term goal is top 150. I think I'm around 180, 200 now. And then, yeah, middle of next year, I'd love to be top 100.
Nice. And then for the singles, the last 2 weeks that you have had, does that change anything? Did you even have goals with singles over the last few months coming into these events?
No.
Short, sweet, and to the point.
No, I didn't. I was just playing and trying to get a few matches under my belt. Now I guess I'll definitely focus a little bit more on singles as well. I never wanted to count myself out as a singles player, but yeah, now I can safely say that, you know, I've got my mojo back a little bit. And yeah, definitely want to keep on playing. So maybe I'll have to factor in a few more 25s for singles, or just carry on what I'm doing. And one thing I found with playing the higher events is that you've always got a good chance to get into qualifying in these things, because there's late dropouts and whatever. So I think maybe I'll just keep doing that.
Last thing, do you think it's helped your singles that you switched the focus to doubles and you didn't necessarily have any hard set goals on the singles court? Do you think that took some pressure off?
I do, yeah. For a few years, I had a split focus of both and was doing okay in both, but not anything world beating. And then this year, I really just thought, no, I'm going to focus on doubles. I'm enjoying it more at the time. Took the focus away from the singles, and yeah, now all of a sudden I've got my best career title. So must be doing something right.
You're doing a lot of things right, and I've got to say, Emily, it's great to see you so relaxed on court and looking like you're really enjoying it, and I think you've got a lot to look forward to, and as a result, so have we. So well done on the last couple of weeks.
Thank
and
you.
I can't wait to see what you do next. I'll see you in Shrewsbury.
You will.
See you there. Thanks again to Emily, who will be featuring in the singles main draw of the W100 event in Shrewsbury. It's going to be a huge week in Shrewsbury, and that week will already be underway by the time you're listening to this. 5 of the world's top 100 players are present, including this year's Wimbledon semi-finalist Tatjana Maria and 2019 Roland Garros finalist Marketa Vondrousova. It's going to be a brilliant week, I can guarantee it. I love Shrewsbury, the club are fantastic, they get so involved. You can find out more about the event and tickets at worldtennistourshrewsbury.com. I myself am going to be very busy hosting and commentating and all that jazz, but I will aim to get some bits recorded for the next podcast. And until then, you can follow Tennis in the UK on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK and on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. So be back here next Tuesday where I will fill you in on what went down. Thank you as ever for listening and au revoir until then. Thank you.